Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it's a Monday morning. It's March 10th. Great to be with you on a Monday. And it's going up to the mid-50s today, maybe even as high as 57 degrees. We'll see. We have a busy morning. We're going to start out after the news and the weather, talking with Monsignor Chuck Kosanke. He's with St. Anne's, of course, Basilica. There's a major announcement in terms of the renovation and the preservation of this beautiful basilica in the Archdiocese of Detroit. St. Anne's is amazing. If you've never been there, it's in the Ambassador Bridge area, southwest Detroit, just gorgeous. And a very unique initiative that was approved by the Vatican. Monsignor Chuck Kosanke joins us at 8:15. Of course, we're going to have Word of the Day with our friend Dave Vacherez from Annunciation Radio, and then Vanessa Denha-Garmo in the news on a Monday. Lots to discuss there. And then Monsignor Charles Pope, of course, in the Register and from the Washington, D.C. area and from EWTN Radio. He has a new book out, The Hell There Is, an exploration of often rejected doctrine of the church. And we'll talk about that, his new book. And then wrapping up with my friend Gary Zimick. Gary is an author, speaker, and founder of FollowingTheTruth.com. He's written several books about Lent, and so we're going to talk to him about not worrying during Lent and giving up worrying during Lent, and also a couple of events he has coming up in not only Pennsylvania but across the United States. Oh, and we have Gail Buckley, of course, with our scripture verse of the week on this, the second week of Lent. Let's take a look at the weather. 35 degrees under sunny skies right now, so pretty nice out there. And depending on which weather forecast, they're saying anywhere from 55 to 58 degrees today, mostly sunny skies, overnight lows of 30. Tomorrow, a high of 36, partly cloudy. Warming up on Wednesday, 43 on Wednesday, and on Thursday, 52. Clouds all the way up to 65 on Friday. So this is going to be, I think, overall a pretty pleasant week. And not bad over the weekend either, 66 degrees on Saturday, and then Sunday, 45 degrees. Across the country, what are we looking at? Thunderstorms and flash flooding possible in the southeast, critical fire weather conditions in the plains on Monday. Scattered showers and isolated strong severe thunderstorms expected across the southeast through today. Scattered instances of flash flooding possible across portions of southern Georgia and northern Florida. Dry and windy conditions may produce fire weather conditions across much of the Great Plains, especially in the northern plains, where critical fire weather conditions are expected. That's the forecast on a Monday morning. It's March 10th, the second week in Lent. I do hope your day is going well. Ton of news to get through. No surprise with that. Let's get started on a Monday morning when it's 8:03, 35 and sunny in the Motor City. In his prepared text for the Angelus yesterday, the Holy Father inviting all of us to care for those who are ill. And as Devin Watkins with Vatican News explains, Holy Father praying for the many people suffering due to violent conflicts.
Pope Francis released the text prepared for the Sunday Angelus prayer, which was published by the Holy See Press Office. In the text, he recalled the Church's Lenten journey toward Easter and invited Christians to make it a time of purification and spiritual renewal, a path of growth in faith, hope, and charity. The Pope said he is thinking especially of the many people who care for those who are sick, saying they represent a sign of the Lord's presence for those under their care. During my prolonged hospitalization here, he said, I too experienced the thoughtfulness of service and the tenderness of care, in particular from the doctors and healthcare workers, whom I thank from the bottom of my heart. He called for a miracle of tenderness to accompany everyone facing adversity so that they might perceive a little light in the night of pain. The Pope then thanked everyone who has been praying for him, adding that he wishes to join spiritually with the officials of the Roman Curia for their annual spiritual exercises, which began on Sunday. He also prayed for the gift of peace for martyred Ukraine, Palestine, Israel, Lebanon, Myanmar, Sudan, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. The Pope expressed concern for recent outbreaks of violence in Syria, calling for full respect for all ethnic and religious components of society, especially civilians. In his Angelus text, Pope Francis recalled the Jubilee for the World of Volunteering, which was held over the weekend in Rome. In our societies too enslaved to market logic, where everything risks being subject to the criterion of interest and the quest for profit, he said, volunteering is prophecy and a sign of hope, because it bears witness to the primacy of gratuitousness, solidarity, and service to those most in need. He thanked everyone who volunteers in their local communities out of the goodness of their hearts, saying their care can help to reawaken hope in others. I'm Devin Watkins.
And starting tonight after the evening, well, the evening rosary prayer for the Pope will be held early inside Paul VI Hall to coincide with the spiritual exercises of the Roman Curia. The faithful of Rome and pilgrims visiting the Eternal City who wish to pray for the Pope can still gather in St. Peter's to take part via video link with officials of the Roman Curia inside Paul VI Hall. The Holy See Press Office announcing yesterday the rosary will take place around 6 in the evening Rome time, following the conclusion of Vespers and the 5 p.m. meditation for the annual spiritual exercises taking place on March 10th through the 14th. In other news this morning, the Trump administration last week moving to drop a Biden-era federal lawsuit against Idaho's broad abortion ban. The Department of Justice filing that motion to dismiss the Biden-era lawsuit, according to court papers filed by St. Luke's Health System, which also has sued the state over the measure. Catholic News Agency reporting Idaho state law largely outlaws abortion but allows for it in life-threatening situations, as well as in cases of rape or incest. The Biden administration had argued the strict ban violates the Federal Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act. The Supreme Court last year blocked the law but did not fully resolve the issue, which went before the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in December. The appeals court has not ruled yet. A district court, meanwhile, ruled that a temporary block of the pro-life law would continue after the federal government dropped its suit. Tammy Trujillo tells us Israel is cutting off electricity to Gaza.
Israel's energy minister announced the move on Saturday, saying he ordered the immediate halt of electricity to the Gaza Strip. It's unclear how much electricity Israel provides to Gaza, but at least one wastewater treatment plant is having its power disconnected by the Israel Electric Corporation. The announcement comes days after Israel stopped all humanitarian aid from entering Gaza in an effort to pressure Hamas into a ceasefire extension agreement. The Palestinian militant group has been pushing for the ceasefire to progress into a second phase where a permanent end to the conflict would be negotiated.
President Trump's envoy for hostages saying Palestinian militant group Hamas is open to a peace deal with Israel where they disarm and give up their political power. Adam Bowler told Fox News yesterday his direct negotiations with Hamas aimed at freezing American hostages are showing some promise.
We also discussed what the end might look like, and I will tell you that Hamas did orient toward a long-term truce, as they called it.
Special Envoy Bowler went on to say he's been keeping Israeli officials informed on the progress of the talks as well. In the event that a truce is reached, Bowler declined to say what concessions Israel might have to make or whether a ceasefire would lead to the creation of a Palestinian state. Mark Mayfield tells us Secretary of State Mark Rubio is headed to the Middle East for Ukrainian peace talks.
The meeting in Saudi Arabia this week comes as representatives of both countries attempt to work on a framework for an initial ceasefire and peace agreement with Russia. The meetings come as President Trump pushes for a minerals deal, along with a change in Ukrainian President Zelensky's attitude towards peace talks. Trump halted military aid and cut off intelligence sharing with Kyiv in an apparent effort to pressure Zelensky to make concessions.
In Washington, D.C., police there investigating after Secret Service agents shot a man during the White House early Sunday morning. An agency spokesperson says agents confronted the armed suspect who allegedly pulled out a gun before being shot and was taken to the hospital in unknown condition. The president was at his Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida at the time of the incident. Later on Sunday, fighter jets from NORAD intercepted a civilian aircraft after it entered restricted airspace over Mar-a-Lago. It was the second such encounter in as many days. Lisa Carton tells us House Republicans are unveiling a short-term funding bill to keep the government running through September.
The six-month plan includes cuts to non-defense programs and the IRS. The 99-page bill is in the form of a continuing resolution known as a CR, which Democrats strongly oppose. House leaders say the bill has White House support ahead of Friday's shutdown deadline. Speaker Mike Johnson said this week he thinks Republicans will be able to pass it along party lines with a floor vote expected as soon as Tuesday.
The Secretary of Commerce says Elon Musk is his partner, but President Trump is in charge at the White House. Appearing on NBC's Meet the Press, Howard Lutnick responding to questions about Musk's position in the administration.
Elon Musk is your partner. He's your partner in technology. He's your partner in thought. He's your partner in doing it. What President Trump made clear is that Elon is your partner.
This comes after a contentious cabinet meeting last week where the billionaire reportedly got into an argument with Secretary of State Marco Rubio. Lutnick said Trump made clear that Musk will work in partnership with cabinet secretaries, but that the president will always be the one in charge. He's insisting he's excited to work with Musk and glad his department has a talented businessman helping it to stay efficient. Jim Forbes tells us President Trump signing an executive order that would limit eligibility for the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program.
Speaking in the Oval Office on Friday, White House Staff Secretary Will Scharf explained why the administration felt the need to make the move.
A lot of these people work for NGO organizations, for nonprofit organizations that engage in illegal or what we would consider to be improper activities.
Under the PSLF, not-for-profit and government employees can have their federal student loans forgiven after 10 years of payments. Student loan borrowers and advocates have vowed to challenge Trump's order in court.
The D.C. Department of Transportation beginning work to remove a Black Lives Matter mural in Northwest Washington, D.C. The agency saying in a press release, work will begin this week and should take another 6 to 8 weeks. The decision to paint over the mural was announced last week, one day after a Republican congressman introduced a bill to withhold funding from the city if it wasn't removed. 25 more Pacific Palisades residents joining the lawsuit filed against the City of Los Angeles and the Department of Water and Power after the wildfires back in January. This brings the total plaintiffs to 48. The lawsuit alleges the city designed a water supply system that would not have enough water pressure to fight the fires. It also says a reservoir located near the Pacific Palisades had been empty since February of last year, which made it more difficult for the fire crews to access water. And after most Americans moved the clocks forward for daylight savings time over the weekend, hospitals say they're preparing to see significant increases in heart attack-related visits today on the first day of the work week. Although the exact reason isn't clear, experts think the lost hour of sleep plays a big role, disrupting the body's natural rhythm. And if you need a nap, well, take one. Today is a day of celebration for people, as Bree Tennis tells us, who love to nap on this national napping day and other days as well.
The day comes every year after we lose that precious hour of sleep due to the return of daylight saving time. But research shows all naps are actually good for you. They improve alertness, boost mood, and memory. And new research from Very Well Mind says napping together is better than napping alone. They say having a nap partner, even if it's your cat or dog, helps you fall asleep faster and promotes better sleep quality. Happy napping.
Doctors are in for a treat this month as a blood moon will phase into a total lunar eclipse. The lunar eclipse will start the evening of March 13th, continue through the early morning hours of the 14th. Astronomers saying the amount of dust and cloud cover will determine how red the eclipse will appear. While the total lunar eclipse don't require any special equipment to watch it, a telescope or binoculars will give you a better view. Staying away from city lights will also improve viewing conditions. It is a Monday morning. Thanks for tuning in to Catholic Connection. It is March 10th. Some exciting news from the Archdiocese of Detroit. A new initiative that is going to not only save a beautiful church, but keep it alive for a long, long time. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Ed Bahura. Are you kids struggling with school? Give them the boost they need with Sylvan Learning Centers. Our experienced tutors make learning fun and effective. And for a limited time, get the first month of tuition at 50% off. Call us now at 1-800-EDUCATE. Don't let this amazing offer pass you by. That's 50% off the first month at Sylvan Learning Centers, where brighter futures begin. Enroll today.
We have all heard the saying that when God closes a door, He opens a window. But we often look so long and so regretfully upon the closed door that we do not see the window open for us. When a client canceled my contract after 7 years of working together, I was not shocked, but I was still very sad. The 2020 COVID-19 crisis put his organization in a financial bind, and they had already been facing budget issues. I found myself dwelling on it for a few days, and then I started to chat with God, repeating a prayer I have said for years. God, bring me the clients you want me to serve. I knew I had to forge ahead and not spend time worrying about the income lost and the working relationship changed. I know, as I'm writing this, that new coaching clients and communication consulting clients are headed my way. I have to look ahead of me at the open window and not behind me at the closed door. This has been a Christ Center Communication Message. I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo, a communications evangelist.
You are so much more than your cancer diagnosis. You're our inspiration. At Trinity Health, cancer care experts combine the latest research and technology with personalized support inspired by you and your unique journey. From diagnosis to treatment and beyond, we're here to guide you every step of the way with care that nurtures your body, mind, and spirit. Learn more at trinityhealthmi.org/cancer. Trinity Health, we see all of you.
The Catholic Church is a vibrant community.
It's the center of life. It's a place that you can go to for all the support that you need and to really drive the development of a community hub.
The church is the foundation to the morals and the values to make the world a better place.
But the Catholic Church also faces a lot of challenges in America today. We see the decline in church participation, and Catholic parishes and schools, they're closing at record rates. That trend is going to continue unless something changes.
These are issues that dioceses across all the United States are dealing with.
The model that the Catholic Church has been using was useful for the past many decades, but it has to change. Why not attempt to create a sustainability model for our Catholic churches, schools, and parishes, which would sustain them through perpetuity?
That's where the Catholic Initiative steps in.
The Catholic Initiative, it's a big announcement from the Archdiocese of Detroit. And on the phone with me is my dear friend, Monsignor Kosanke from St. Anne's in southwest Detroit. Monsignor, this is a very unique initiative, and I know the Archbishop Vigneron, who is officially stepping down this week, retiring, he's approving it, he's excited about it, and this is something that's good news for everyone. Tell us about it. First of all, what is the Catholic Initiative?
The Catholic Initiative is a public charity affiliated with the Pulte Family Charitable Foundation. It's brand new, and its goal is to restore and make sustainable, iconic churches and schools in the United States. And the Basilica of St. Ian's is the first project. There's a couple more that's in the hopper, but not ready yet in the next 5 years. But the Catholic Initiative hopes to raise significant money for the next 10 years so that more churches like St. Ian's would benefit from their support.
So
it all started. It started 3 years ago, actually, Teresa, that I had raised $5 million amongst my friends, who I hope are still friends, but to restore St. Anne's, because that's the purpose, one of the main purposes Archbishop Vigneron sent me to St. Anne's, was not only to rebuild the community, but to restore the church, the diocese wouldn't lose it. So I've been there almost 9 years. It's been a lot of work, and both with the community and with the project. By 2020, we determined that at that time the budget was $26 million. I raised the first five to restore the steeples for $3 million, plus clean up $500,000. So $3.5 million has been spent already. But I hit a brick wall. Mm-hmm. And because wealthy Catholics were dubious that the whole project could be done. So if they gave me $1 million, if the project isn't completed, in their mind, that million would be wasted. So I prayed about this. This is all God, by the way. And you don't have time, but, I mean, this is really all God. And I prayed and prayed. I did sort of like a Mother Angelica and telling the Lord to, you know, either do something or not. And I didn't have the accent, but my last person I went to visit, because I visited most of the wealthy Catholics in Detroit, was Mark Pulte. And he listened, and he said, well, I've been thinking of another, you know, project or endeavor, and he says, I think I can help you. And that's how it got started. And Mark and I have worked closely together for 3 years. It had to go all the way to Vatican. In fact, Mark said, how do we do this? And I explained it, and he says, you know how to do this? And I said, yes. I said, oh, but there's no guarantees. I don't know what, you know, the Vatican is going to say. But the Vatican approved it on my birthday.
Wow.
The letter stated on my birthday. And so once we got the approval, then we had to go through all the legal stuff in terms of the sale and lease back and all of that till we got to the point where we could now announce it. And he has the family architect, and we'll choose a general contractor in the next month or so, and we'll go and get started. And people should see scaffolding and all kinds of equipment by, you know, spring of 26, right after Easter.
Wow. So when do you think that, how long, I mean, I know it's far out, but how long will it take to complete the entire project, do you think?
Mark Pulte wants to do it in 3 years, starting in 26, so we're looking at 4 years from now, as construction goes, and that's his forte, so he knows better than I, but, so we're looking at hopefully 29 at the most, 2030.
The video that was produced, we played a short piece of it. It's really well done, and it goes into great detail to answer a lot of questions. Do you think, Monsignor, you mentioned that some other churches might be in the hopper right now and are in the hopper. Do you think this is a model that can be used across the country?
Yes, and here's why. And I know this from my own begging experience. You know, Mark knows that wealthy Catholics are very reluctant to give money to the church for two reasons. One, they don't want their money to go to abuse claims. And two, they don't trust that some bishops and priests can manage it very well. Mm. So Mark said, you know, nothing personal against me. I have a very good reputation as, you know, a good steward, but that's not always the case. By St. Anne's Church being sold to the Catholic Initiative and leased back exclusively, then that kind of solves the problem of it being used for any claim. And then with the foundation managing the project, then that solves that problem. So it really solves those two questions. And he hired a development team from the University of Notre Dame. And so he's very, very serious about this. And that team was hired in July of last year, and have been working for the last 8 months on the campaign and everything. They've raised literally millions of dollars for Notre Dame. So this is the real deal. And for the Vatican to approve it is groundbreaking. This has not been done before.
And this is pretty much breaking news. I mean, this just came out. You just sent out the press release yesterday.
Yes, I told the parishioners at the masses yesterday, and then it officially became public at 1:30 p.m.
Wow. In terms of the church itself, if people haven't been there, it's so beautiful and it's so unique. And I thought it was very interesting, Monsignor, that in the video, the Archbishop said he was very concerned that even though he knew that you were at the helm and are very good at raising money and have a really good business background, this was a tough one to crack because of all the issues with the church because it's so old. I mean, so this is really saving this amazing place.
I keep the Archbishop apprised on a very regular basis. He knows completely what's been going on the last almost 9 years. So he's very much informed. And when I brought this proposal to him, you know, we talked about it, and I basically said that, you know, if we did not do this, we would have to close the Basilica probably in 12 to 15 years.
Wow. That would have been such a loss because it's so beautiful. Right.
I mean, that's why he sent me in 2016. So for everything to be, all the work to be done, and then for it to go down the drain, you know, certainly would have been heartbreaking for me and as well as to the parish. Well, part of this, Mark, is that, you know, it's one thing to restore the church and chapel and campus and all that for $35 million. I've already done five, so they're going to raise another 30. In addition to that, is a $20 million endowment, which would, that way any pastor after me will never, ever have to worry about raising the funds for a new roof, a new boiler, a new parking lot, you know, et cetera. That endowment assures that the parish will always have the funds, to do the repairs and maintenance that it needs to do.
So just a question, the reporter in me, why wasn't something like this attempted before? Because it just makes so much sense. I mean, not on your part individually, but I mean with the church, because people have legitimate concerns, and you brought up a really good point that there's not too many Kosankis out there that have a business background. I mean, God love them, there's great pastors and evangelizers, but business may not be their thing, and when they walk into a parish, it's a small or large business. So this seems like a win-win for everybody.
Well, it does, but I have to tell you, when I had to appear before the Archdiocesan Finance Council, which had to literally vote to whether this went to Rome or not. I mean, that's just part of the process in church law. After I gave my presentation, it was 50-50. I mean, half the group, and these are all Catholic business people on this council to advise the Archbishop. Some of them in real estate, and the people that were having the hardest time with it was the people in real estate, because they said, you're giving up the title. Yes, we are. You shouldn't do that. Okay, do you want me to keep the title, then sell it to somebody 15 years from now? What are you recommending? So it was interesting how, like you say, it seems like it would make sense. It's a great arrangement, but people far more educated in these matters than I initially were struggling with it. I had to walk them through it, and I'm not the real estate attorney. So it's so new, so radical that initially some people had trouble processing it, even though like my parish finance council, none of them have a college degree, and also others like yourself who are educated say, well, wait, wow, this is a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. What do you mean they're going to give $50 million and lease it back exclusively to us for 200 years? What's the problem?
Right. Well, I think also you have to look at the Pulte family and how dedicated, I mean, they're such strong Catholics, and how dedicated they
are
not to,
just anybody,
to the faith,
you're correct.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they have
Go ahead.
No, I said, you know, they started off, of course, when Mr. Pulte passed. I knew Mr. Pulte. He had helped me at St. Benedict's in Highland Park and other places. So he was quietly gave away millions of dollars during his lifetime, quietly. But when he passed, his assets went into this foundation for $1 billion. He started a billion-dollar foundation. Mm. And so as a result of the interest income off of that endowment, I mean, they have, if you look, go to University of Notre Dame's website, the Pulte Global Initiative, it has partnered with 400 organizations to help people in the third world. I mean, what they've done is absolutely phenomenal. That's the first leg. And then about 5 years ago, they started the second leg, which is the humanitarian hotels. And their first project was St. John's in Plymouth, where they bought St. John's and all the profits from St. John's. People locally know St. John's. The profits go to charity. And they had to legally work that out. So that's automatic. And then the second project is in at Stonecliff on Mackinac Island, which just opened
beautiful.
Last year. Mm-hmm. So now this is the third leg, the Catholic Initiative. So what Mark and his sister Nancy have done with their dad's foundation to basically multiply it has just been incredible. And Mark has an incredible vision, and I think his dad would be proud that, you know, they could have just sat back and say, okay, we'll give grants to, you know, for homeless and soup kitchens and all, and Catholic charities, and they do. But Mark is a huge thinker, and what has happened in the last 6-7 years with the foundation and will happen is just remarkable.
Well, because he's not just rebuilding structures and remodeling structures, he's rebuilding communities. So that's where the vision comes in. Monsignor, we're out of time, but if you have time later in the week or maybe even next week, I'd like to dive into this more deeply and even give this more exposure nationally in the second hour of the program, because it's such a unique effort, and really, I think, a wonderful, especially to save such a beautiful, beautiful basilica. If people want more information on visiting St. Anne's, where do they find out more information on this?
Just go to our website. We also have this information on our website. The diocese has it on their website as well. So if you want more detail that we can't do in obviously, 10, 15 minutes, the information is public. And, I look forward to being on your show in the next few days or next week to dive more into, what this groundbreaking initiative is all about.
Well, that's awesome. And such a beautiful place. Monsignor Kosanke with St. Anne's Basilica on a very exciting and new initiative. First one of its kind, the Cashless Catholic Initiative. And again, information on the church website as well as the AOD.org website. And we'll have Monsignor on again very soon to dive more deeply into this unique effort, beginning right here in Motown, the AOD, Archdiocese of Detroit. Up next on a Monday morning, the Word of the Day with our friend Dave Escherez. So here we go.
Our word for today is holy. Holy is our word for today, found in the book of Leviticus, chapter 19. The Lord said to Moses, "Speak to the whole assembly of the children of Israel and tell them, 'Be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. You shall not steal, you shall not lie or speak falsely to one another. You shall not swear falsely by my name, thus profaning the name of the Lord your God. I am the Lord. You shall not defraud or rob your neighbor. You shall not withhold overnight the wages of your day laborer. You shall not curse the deaf or put a stumbling block in front of the blind, but you shall fear the Lord your God. I am the Lord.'" And then it goes on with all of these other things that we are to follow, but then Jesus later boils it down to these two things. "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself." This, he says, sums up the law and the prophets, everything. This is what it takes, brothers and sisters, to be holy. But staying in that book of Leviticus today, chapter 19, "You shall not curse the deaf or put a stumbling block in front of the blind." Man, our mission, our goal is simple. It is to minister to the most vulnerable among us. Let me say it again. It is to minister to the most vulnerable among us. Now, that as a precedent, right? First, who is the most vulnerable among us? You could certainly say in the form of the physical body, it is the unborn, right? So we are called to defend the unborn. Then, of course, the immigrant, all of those who are most vulnerable among us, the poor, absolutely, the downtrodden, the widow. We see it over and over and over again. That list is clear. But if we really look at who the most vulnerable among us is, it is the one who has been deceived by the evil one. It is the victim of the evil one himself, the one who has fallen, the one who has followed the evil one, who he has tricked into following him and tricked away from following the Lord God. He is the most vulnerable. She is the most vulnerable. Why? Because that vulnerability, because that deception ends in eternal death. Of course, it's important to minister to the one who is in need in front of us, because they are suffering in the body, could even lead to physical death for the very vulnerable among us. And yes, that's important. But there's something even more important here, brothers and sisters. That is the vulnerable one when it comes to the spirit, to the spiritual life, to eternity. And then we see this laid out very clearly in the Gospel of Matthew today, chapter 25, when Jesus divides the sheep and the goats. And he says he will place the sheep on his right and the goats on his left, speaking of the king. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. A stranger and you welcomed me in. Naked and you clothed me. Ill and you cared for me. In prison and you visited me." And then, of course, they ask, "When did we do this?" And he says, "When you did it to the least of my brethren, you did it for me." Come, enter into eternal life. And to those on his left, just the opposite. He said, "You did not do these things." And they said, "When did we see you?" And he said, "When you did not do it for the least of my brethren, you did not do it for me." What separates the sheep and the goats, brothers and sisters? It is simple. what they did and did not do. In order to be holy like our Lord God is holy, we are to minister to the most vulnerable among us. Yes, those vulnerable in the body, but also those vulnerable in the spirit, those lacking what is needed for eternal life, those who have been deceived by the prince of this world, that we might minister to them, that we might not put a stumbling block in front of them, but that we might welcome them into the kingdom through the proclamation of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Holy, our word for today.
Thanks, Dave. And up next, after the break, we're going to check in with our very own Vanessa Denha-Garmo from Epiphany, heard every day here at noon, our In the News segment. So you have a man who identifies as a woman talking all about being a woman on International Women's Day. What did the media do with it? Of course, not much. That and many other stories in the news coming up. This has become somewhat of a theme song for us here at In the News, an Out of Touch from Hall & Oates. It's such a good song,
true,
considering what we're talking about. Vanessa Denha-Garmo joins us, of course, from Epiphany. And Vanessa, you sent me some clips. I don't know, there's so many things that we need to talk about, but on Saturday we marked International Women's Day. You and I were on the air on your program on Friday, along with Kelly Wahlquist, talking about it. You were talking about it all week, International Women's Month. And now we have, in this clip you showed me, and Andrew's going to play it, this is how far into Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs land we've gone in some areas. So glad that we have people in office now who are trying to put an end to this and help these people who think that they are the opposite sex when they're not. So this is a man identifying as a woman, talking about what it's like to be a woman on International Women's Day on Saturday. Andrew, roll the audio, please.
For cis women, BIPOC women have to do it. For white women, all women have to do it. For men, and we are sick of it. It was women teaching me that there is no definition that anyone can find to define what is a woman that excludes me, that does not also exclude millions of cisgender women. Women born without a uterus, women born with chromosomal incongruities, women with hormone imbalances, women with facial hair. According to the Boston Children's Hospital, one in every 5,000 women is born without a vagina. There is no way to say that trans women do not belong without also saying that all of them are not women either, and I dare you to say to your...
All right, enough. I can't take it anymore. Enough. I mean, seriously? Well, first of all, Boston Children's Hospital has been extremely criticized and under the radar for what they've been doing to children for years. But he's a man, and he's identifying as a woman. And if people literally have gender dysphoria and have issues, the church says to help them. The church says to bring them along and to help them, but not to give in to the wrong kind of thinking that you can change your biological sex. And yet this person is given a huge platform.
Yeah. Well, they're supporting delusion, T, and there's also a lot of research. What he failed to mention, there's a lot of research that points that this is
in the opposite direction.
Yeah. Well, this is this is a psychological. You need help. I mean, this is a sickness. You know, gender dysphoria, and many people grow out of it too. So there's so much they don't include in that talk. What's insulting is that they give them a large platform to speak this nonsense and really offending real. Where are the women's lib
where's
people?
Now? Where's the national organization for women? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, where are they saying, you know, enough is enough? You're taking away from women and the successes they've had. And that's why I focused on Catholic leadership women in my show, to give a different perspective, a Catholic leadership perspective. But this is insulting, further insult. And, of course, the media, you know, buys right into this and praises this and give this, you know, person a platform instead of challenging them on the ludicrousy of all of this.
What kind of coverage did this receive? And did they ask questions? Did they ask people who may disagree with him? Did they cover the story fully? No, and that's the problem.
And other research, he cites one, like to your point, one research, Boston, right, and that has been under the, you know, has been challenged for their research, right? But he doesn't cite any other but you know, a psychological study that says no, this is dysphoria and there's a mental illness here. They don't cite any of that, and that's what the media's job is to do, saying no, there's a lot of research that says gender dysphoria is actually a mental illness, and there's a lot of studies out on there, but they don't report that, they don't show that side, and they further insult women, and the media says nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you have, and I think I mentioned this, was it on your show or maybe in my show? I can't remember. Maybe in my Fact Check Friday. That story that came out earlier this year, or was it late last year, but it's a big story about a huge study that was done with taxpayer dollars. It cost like $10 million. And the doctor who did it suppressed it because she investigated to see if puberty blockers help children who have, you know, think they're the opposite sex. And she found out that, no, they didn't for the most part. And
yeah.
The New York Times, actually, to their credit, they actually reported it, but it didn't get much play elsewhere. And this was a huge, huge study done with our tax dollars showing that these puberty blockers are causing more harm than good.
Yeah.
And that's another story that doesn't get out there.
Yeah. Because, T, at the end of the day, there's an agenda that doesn't include seeking truth. It's just pushing an agenda. And anything that doesn't support that agenda, they don't want that information out there. We're seeing this time and time and time again. But again, to your point, where is now? Where are all these women who shout, my body, my choice, and want all these rights for women and women protection and women's rights, and you allow a man to stand up there celebrating women on International Women's Month and claiming to be a woman.
To destroy women's sports. Look what's going on with women's sports.
Yeah, destroy women's sports. Yeah, and where are all those women? I mean, we have people that do not want to accept truth and to seek truth. And we know from a spiritual and Catholic perspective, T, this is spiritual warfare. You know, it's the devil that continues the lies. And he weaves a web of lies, and these people have been tangled all in them, and they can't see their way out. That's what's going on in the world.
And then when you see the people's response to this, and they're saying you show them facts, and they say no, this is not true. That's when you know there's a real psychological problem.
Oh, yeah.
There's a mental block because they're so tied into their agenda that they cannot see the truth. Now this is a case with a lot of people on the left, and we've always said that for a while we didn't think that there was actually, let's say, one think tank that was putting out all these different talking points, but the last few months since the election, it's been so bad, and Andrew has this
so
clip
ridiculous.
Of the Democrats responding to Donald Trump, and everyone saying the same thing, almost word for word. We have that clip, too.
Yeah.
When I win, I will immediately bring prices down starting on day one.
That ain't true. That's what you just heard.
Since day one
of Donald Trump's presidency, prices are not down, they're up. Inflation is getting worse.
Inflation
not better. The prices of grocery, gas, eggs, of essentials. It's not getting better. It's getting worse. Meanwhile, Donald Trump has done nothing. Goose eggs to lower prices. Instead, he's pardoned violent criminals who savagely beat police officers
on January 6th.
He's letting Elon Musk take a chainsaw to vital government programs, and then, even worse, giving him access to Americans' most sensitive data. Social Security numbers.
Don't they have a mind of their own?
No, this
word
is Schumer.
Word.
Okay, the two
every single word.
Yes, and those two voices that you've heard the most there is Schumer and Elizabeth Warren.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I have been saying this for years. Is there one place, one hub, that somebody's writing the script and just giving it out to the media and to the Democrats? Because we've seen same headlines, right, all across, and now we're seeing these Democrats word for word verbatim. This is a joke. This is absolutely ridiculous, and it's insulting to the American people. They're not critical thinkers. They're just playing the same playbook. That's all that's happening here.
Well, where are the media asking, why are you all saying that? You may agree. Okay, you agree. I get it, because you're in one party, one mind. That's all. You know, Republicans, the same thing. They agree. And they may say the same things in terms of about the issues, but I haven't seen a clip that shows them literally saying word for word, reading the same script. And the other thing is, so why aren't the media asking about that? And then secondly, why aren't the media asking, well, wait a minute. Before the election, you said the economy was doing fabulously and that there was no problem with finances, that people weren't having any problem meeting their monthly bills, and that you go to the grocery store and it was great. I mean, remember that story I told you about with Scott Pell from 60 Minutes?
Yeah.
Where he sat down with the restaurant owner and she was saying how expensive it was to try to fill her kitchen to serve her customers. He said, no, it's not. basically telling her that what she just experienced at the grocery store was a lie.
It was a lie. I know, because it doesn't
fit
your agenda.
So you can't have it both ways. You can't sit there and not only sit there and say you're independent thinkers. Okay, you agree, but you're able to express your own opinion about a similar topic. You know, say that you can do this, and you have all these great statements, and then sit there and also lie about the economy and now turn it around to suit your agenda. And this is where the media need to be calling them out on this, and they're not.
But, T, their media is not going to call them out on this because they're doing the same thing.
I think they're feeding each other.
Yeah, they are, because we saw this in story after story where they all had the same headlines. The networks were repeating the same thing, lead stories, and saying the exact same thing. So they're following a script, too. So they're even worse, because they're supposed to be the fact checkers, right? They're supposed to be the truth seekers, and now they're not doing that. They're just taking the same scripts and rewriting them for broadcast or print and saying the same exact thing. So we have nobody holding these people accountable or challenging them. And the only place that you're seeing this, unfortunately, is X. That's where you're seeing all these clips. And that's why they want it so badly. That's why they're going after Elon Musk so much, because he's the only one that's really exposing them.
Yeah. And, you know, it's really important for us, too, to look at this. And we're not saying that the Republicans are perfect or in terms of politics. I mean, they both have their issues. But in order to speak your mind, you should be able to speak it on your own and speak it articulately and not have to repeat a statement. I mean, these are experienced politicians. Elizabeth Warren, Chuck Schumer, they've been around for a long time.
Yeah.
Okay, if you feel strongly about the economy, even though what you said, you're totally have a totally different take on it than before the election, then speak for yourself. Don't take talking points. I mean, in this day and age, do they not think that it's going to come out?
Yeah, and they're reading it verbatim. Literally verbatim, right. Word for word. You know, and another thing, and the whole thing with the clip I showed you, T, that which I really want to talk about, is the two representatives who are showing this little stick figure meme, and where they're pounding on Republicans. You have Representative Jasmine Crockett upload a disturbing and demanding video that depicts her and Representative AOC physically beating Republican voters to death with their hands as they punch and feet as a stomp on the Instagram. They may think this is funny. This is not funny. This is inciting violence. And where is, honestly, where is the FBI on this? How can they allow two representatives to incite violence?
Maybe they haven't seen it yet.
I know, but on any Americans. Yeah. And I actually tagged the head of the FBI because I think this is despicable. This should not be allowed on any side, whether you're Republican or Democrat. Nobody should be inciting this kind of violence, especially people who are supposed to be public servants representing the people. And they're inciting violence on the American people, saying, let's stomp them to death. How can this be allowed? And where's the media? Where's the media outrage on this? How is this acceptable? So,
could you imagine if a conservative did this?
Oh, it'd be headline news everywhere. There'd be a media frenzy on this. This would be nonstop news. So, yeah, maybe the FBI has seen it, maybe they haven't seen it, and I'm not criticizing them. I'm just saying I tagged them for a purpose because this should not be allowed. So what are they going to tell the American people? Go and beat Republicans up and you'll be protected because we as representatives are telling you to go do that? I mean, how is that
not seen
any other way?
It's stick people? I mean, do they think it's okay because it's not real people in that video?
I have no idea. But how is this allowed? So we can't agree, so let's go beat each other to death. This is what they're saying. We don't agree with you, so we're going to beat you to death. This is why we will always have division in this country if we don't stop this. I mean,
absolutely.
This is getting so out of hand, and they're becoming so unhinged, and the media should be on top of this and reporting this and speaking against this. This is ridiculous.
Well, you had a man, V, who was arrested very close to the White House yesterday with a gun. And was shot and taken to the hospital. And you had two cases of planes flying in protected airspace over Mar-a-Lago. So you have to look at when images are put out there and when a message is constantly pounded upon. And I know this from the research I've done on the media. It does impact people. Not everyone is going to go out and commit violence. Not everyone.
Yeah.
It will be rare. But why do you want to promote that? And if anything, it just promotes division, as you said.
Yeah, they're supposed to be the party of peace and the unity, and they've proven anything but
joy.
That.
And joy.
And, yeah.
Party joy,
of joy, unity, yeah. And yeah. And they have proven they're the absolute opposite of that. And ever since President Trump was elected, we have seen one post after another post on social media of people wanting his execution. I mean, this is getting outrageous. I showed you another one. Where is the media coverage on the regular posts of people wanting to execute the president of the United States?
Yeah.
That is against the law. Yep. And we're seeing it over and over and over again. All
and
over
they don't even
media.
Hide their identity. They're just right
oh,
out
no.
there on their cell phones.
Because yeah. you have representatives like AOC showing their own posts saying, let's stomp these Republicans out. So they figure they have free reign and they're safe.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. V, great discussion. Looking forward to Epiphany today, as always. Vanessa Denha-Garmo, and she is on the air every day, Monday through Friday at noon, and also right here on Catholic Connection. We'll be right back on a Monday morning. Stay tuned.
Looking for a retreat venue for your youth group, sports team, ministry, or staff event? St. Francis Retreat Center in DeWitt sits on a picturesque 95-acre property, complete with three large conference rooms, two chapels, two dining rooms with commercial kitchens, meeting spaces for smaller groups, overnight lodging, and a professional staff to make your event a success. Call 517-669-8321 or visit stfrancis.ws to book your event today.
The Heart of the Interior Life with Elizabeth Jangle.
In St. Ignatius of Loyola's 14 Rules for the Discernment of Spirits, St. Ignatius introduces the fourth rule with the term spiritual desolation. What is spiritual desolation? Father Timothy Gallagher explains, Ignatius employs the term desolation, a condition of affective heaviness that instills sadness and depletes energy for living. The adjective spiritual, as throughout the rules, signifies that which is directly and immediately referred to faith and the pursuit of God's will. Thus, the phrase spiritual desolation indicates an affective heaviness directly impacting our faith and the pursuit of God's will. Just as there is spiritual desolation, there is also non-spiritual desolation. A non-spiritual desolation can be physically or psychologically based, and left uncared for, can become a catalyst for spiritual desolation.
For more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net.
Resetting your password, unsubscribing from emails, printing anything. Why are simple things sometimes so complicated? Thankfully, with an auto owner's insurance independent agent, getting the right coverage for your business doesn't have to be one of them, so you can get back to more important things, like learning how that printer works. That's simple human sense.
Call Choice Insurance Agency at 734-641-4200.
You don't want to miss the 9 o'clock hour either of Catholic Connection, because we are going to be talking with Monsignor Pope. You know him well from EW10 and The Register, and he's got a brand new book out, The Hell There Is, an exploration of an often rejected doctrine of the Church. And then also Gary Zimick joins us on Giving Up Worrying for Lent, and they'll wrap up with our scripture verse of the week. We'll be right back.